Welcome to Movement Talks. After a summer break, here we are again, and today I have the big pleasure to be here with Arika Yamada. Hello, Arika.
Hello, Giacomo.
Thanks for being with us today. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Where are you at the moment?
I am currently in Antwerp, Belgium. My partner is from here. Yeah, it's a lovely day here.
Good. I hope you enjoy. And so before we start, usually we start with a small introduction for the people that don't know you. Would you mind telling us a bit about yourself?
Sure. This is always tougher than you think. yes, I'm Arika. I am from the States, but currently have a Swedish passport, though I speak no Swedish whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Which brings me to, yes, I'm a dancer at the Göteborgs Operans Dance Company in Gothenburg. I've been there for 8 years now. And I am also very passionately a high performance coach to high achievers, artists, creatives, athletes, musicians, you name it. So that is kind of what I'm doing now. I'm also a mother and a partner.
Oh, that's beautiful. A lot of things. Of course, it's very difficult to describe yourself and tell, I mean, everybody's a lot of things at the same time nowadays. Luckily, I think, because I strongly believe in liminality and the possibility of being more things at once. So as you said, besides being an amazing performer, you are as well a coach. How did you come to the decision that you wanted to study or prepare yourself and therefore become a coach?
Long story short, I mean, it's actually tied. My journey to become a coach is very much tied to my career as a dancer because I actually burnt out pretty badly. My third season fourth season in the company, I think I had some negative thought patterns and a kind of a harsh relationship with my inner dialogue, with my own mind. And on the outside, it may have looked like success and that I was doing fine and doing well. And I also said often, I'm fine. But I wasn't, and I burnt out. It was my second time burning out in my career where I wanted to just stop dancing. I had some like anxiety attacks walking into the studio, this pressure to be creative and to create. And so I had to take 2 months off. I was very grateful that my director was so understanding, and she let me have some time off to reevaluate my life and my relationship to myself, basically. And I thought, I was like, there must be a better way of being. There must be a better way of working. And I fell into coaching. I looked for a school, some kind of studies. And I started my studies with IPEC. Which is a coaching school. And yeah, little did I know that it was going to be a lot of turning myself inside out, a lot of excruciating growth and learning about myself and how I navigate my inner dialogues and how I perceive the world. And now I get to help others kind of reflect and see themselves also from the inside out. So that's how I fell into coaching.
So you decided to apply it to the world of dance, or was it specifically for the studies that you did? Were they specifically related to performance or?
Well, I think the method applies to everybody. I mean, knowing yourself, a deeper exploration of your inner world. It's for absolutely everybody, but naturally, because of my environment, and because my very local world is the dance world, where I am surrounded by exquisite performers and artists, that's who I get to help now. And it's not, in my coaching practice, it's a lot of one-on-one relationships. But you know, it's a lot about leadership. It's leading yourself, leadership within your own world. And also I find myself having conversations with, you know, colleagues with an issue that's happening in the studio, or the way I converse with, you know, the rehearsal directors or the director, the choreographer, asking for what I need. I feel like those conversations have really shifted because I'm able to see more of a bird's eye view. I'm less within my blinders. I'm less zoomed in. I can zoom out to see the situations with a wide perspective. So the conversations that I have with my colleagues and friends and my working environment has changed immensely. So I feel, really lucky to be able to lead my own world and my surroundings in that way. Anyone needs to be fixed. I don't think, anyone is broken. I really truly see the people who come to me very whole and innately healthy and well and extraordinary. But if they come to me with specific issues, we explore and see, let's say, one situation that they're going through right now. We take a look at that situation, we put it in our hands, and we get to look at it from different angles, shift a perspective to see it from a different light, and easier to solve or know what step to take next. But also, we have little things that we can unblock, which unblocks our path towards what we want to do. But what I love about my job is that we get to bring forward people's true desires and their dreams, their biggest dreams. And we talk a lot about the language that we use. We say a lot of shoulds. I should do this because blah, blah, blah. Oh, I need to do this because no. But we want to go to a place of I want to fill in the blank. And when you get more clear about who you are, so we do a lot of values work, like what is really important to you? What is valuable to you? What do you prioritize? What is important to you? And when you know what that is, which is the who you are, it becomes very clear the trajectory where you're headed to. That's a beautiful part about the coaching process.
What would you mind describing the feeling? This may be to help out people who feel something but they are not capable of addressing it.
I mean being a dancer myself and being a part of the inner inside of a creation process, there tends to be a lot of frustrations from not being seen and heard. I observe, my observation is that it's the dance world, there's still a culture of silence, and it's difficult to speak up sometimes in the middle of the studio to raise your hand, raise questions that challenges the process, that challenges the choreographer. And then of course we feel conflicted inside, you know, and we talk about it amongst us dancers, but yeah, it's challenging to really raise that question that might shake up the room. So I feel like when we withhold in that way and that piles up, it becomes very conflicting inside of us. And we feel a bit dissonant to ourselves because maybe what is going on around us in the studio, it doesn't align with our values. You know, one of my highest values is, you know, communication and community and humor, actually. Yeah. And if I'm not able to speak out in that way, and if that's not the environment that I'm in, I feel like a bit icky inside, you know? I think we all know kind of what that feels like.
Yeah.
So I challenge myself on a daily basis. I have a lot of conversations with my colleagues, and I truly believe that at the where I am now in the company, we are trying to build a culture of expression, expressing ourselves, not in that corny way, but no, to be expressed, to be heard, to be seen, to raise those challenging questions. Because then it challenges our artistry and maybe perhaps the direction of the work that we're making, but also to feel good in our skin, you know, to feel complete, to feel whole. And because who feels good holding back?
Yeah.
Who feels good holding ourselves back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly as you said as well, like effect of making it become the issue, making it become bigger or piling up frustrations makes the problem bigger and bigger and bigger, and bigger is the problem, and then more difficult is actually to solve it or to face it. And also the feelings or being scared of facing the problem is bigger, becomes a bit more difficult. I think it's also very much related with the communication and maybe the possibility of being honest and accepting vulnerabilities and sharing vulnerabilities. I think we live in a society in which it's not so easy to accept or like express vulnerabilities, and yeah, that makes it difficult. And definitely sometimes I think you need somebody that helps you to go through that. And it's great what you are doing, actually. What do you think is responsible for making someone feel such way? Is it just a personal thing, or is it the system in which we are in?
I mean, as human beings, I just read somewhere that we each hold like at around 7 generations of fears. You know, I don't know how many hundreds of years that is, but, you know, maybe 100 years. You know, my ancestors, like 7 generations. So I'm holding the fear of, you know, 7 generations ago of what my great, 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 great grandmother felt in that era. And so like this in the dance world, it's also quite deep in there, you know, the way things are run and the way that people behave a certain way because they were treated a certain way when they were being educated, when they were going through this training, and that person behaves the way they are behaving because that's what was passed on to them, you know. But I mean, the people that I am around now, we are going to be the leadership. We're going to be in the leadership role in a few years or, you know, decade from now. And I do feel a shift happening now, where we are shaping our working environment the way we would like it to be. I just had a conversation with a choreographer, a young choreographer, a friend of mine from the opera, doing a big creation soon. And we're having conversations about, okay, like casting. Casting is always tough. I have not talked to a single dancer who loves casting. It's always nerve-wracking. You know, it's like there's this bit of anxiety around castings and auditions, you know, being the fear of rejection and the fear of being judged. It's scary. So we were talking about, okay, like what would be the ideal situation in a casting? You know, maybe it's not them picking us. Maybe we get to address who we'd like to work with. You know, we go into a studio, we work with a choreographer a little bit, and then maybe we get to put our name in if we're interested in working with that choreographer. And okay, maybe at the end of the day, the director and, you know, the two choreographers of that program, they still have to have that conversation about who's where. But if we had any say in it of where we desire to be, maybe that could be taken into account. You know, because when we want to be somewhere, I think we show up differently in the studio, you know, and if we don't want to be there, we show up very differently in that studio, you know, less available, less generous in how we offer our creativity and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think you said something also very important, because I mean, as dancers, you are educated and in the system in which, I mean, you have to go out, show yourself and be chosen for something, mm-hmm. but you are never kind of educated on also eventually facing an audition with the idea of you as a dancer, seeing if you like the work of the choreographer. You are always like faced with the idea that the choreographer has to choose you, but not that you eventually also can decide if you like or if you would like to work with that specific choreographer. This is something that, like in school, for example, I have the feeling that they don't teach to go and explore eventually an audition. But I personally strongly believe that it's also up to the dancer to see if it's also your choice. And I think this could be a very valuable value that the new generation of dancers should get acquainted to. Do you think that also, like, I was wondering about how much eventually the digital era, for example, affects also these insecurities and vulnerabilities that people face, and so this moment of crisis. Because the digital era kind of imposes you or puts you in a situation in which maybe it puts you in a situation in which you can compare yourself to the others. Or what do you think about that?
Do you think you're speaking about like social platforms and videos? Our education, since we are at school, we look to the front of the room to be validated. You know, this outwards validation.
Yeah.
To see if we're doing something right, or is this correct? Is this good? At some point, I haven't figured this out, but at some point, we have to have ownership, right? We build more knowing. And then less knowing, but to have ownership of, yes, like validating, being able to validate ourselves, saying, yes, that's good. I'm good enough. Yeah, this is good enough. But somehow we continue to look outwards to be told that we're good enough. And I think in social media, if you have a not so healthy relationship with social media, one could easily fall into that trap of, you know, likes or views. How many likes or how many views determines your value or the value of your content. And then you're kind of undermining your power, or like lessening your power. You're giving the power away to the outside, instead of being able to say, well, I liked that. I liked what I did. That's like ownership, full ownership. That's so empowering to be able to say that. But when you're looking outwards at a number or the likes, and that's your measure, if that becomes the measure of your success, that becomes very turbulent. You know, yes. One day you have thousands of likes, and then the next day you have, I don't know, fewer. And so if you depend on that as how you value or how you make yourself worthy, that's a lot. It's shaky. That's shaky grounds. But if it's coming from a place of sharing, actually my partner just recently turned off his thing on Instagram where you can turn off or take away the numbers and the likes. Mm-hmm. So he can't see how many people saw it or liked it. And same to the outside world, they can't see the numbers. So he's not determined by numbers or likes. And it's so much more a pleasant place to be, because Instagram can be inspiring. I love it on there. But he has a much healthier and a pleasant relationship to Instagram now, because he just gets to share. He gets to just share his photography and his work. So it's good to check in with ourselves. Why? Yeah. When do we go on Instagram? Why? Why are we putting it out there? Why are we scrolling? Are we bored? Are we comparing ourselves? Are we pitying ourselves? And that's why we're going on Instagram. And you know, how does it make you feel? So it's always a good thing to gauge where we're at with our mentality and how we look towards our phones.
Sometimes I have the feeling that we are so much driven into wanting more than thinking that it's not enough what we have done till now, instead of eventually also stopping and eventually looking how much we did.
I've kind of been implementing a new practice, which is, you know, after a rehearsal, after a showing, after a show, or even class, I take a look and I go, what did I do well today? What went well? What about me made this experience of class, you know, enjoyable? I'm in there because I like it. You know, so yeah. What went well today, you know? And then where's the opportunity for growth? What can I lean into? What can I get curious? What can I get interested in to work on tomorrow? So that's a new practice that I've been giving my clients, and something that I practice as well. I think it starts in those little places, in the little moments, just class, that one performance. And then that grows inside of you. And then when you get to a point in your career where you look back, I mean, who really knows when that stop is? I mean, I guess you feel it intuitively, you know, when you feel complete with it. I mean, I would love to bow out when I feel complete, not broken. But, you know, this practice of looking back at your immediate past be like, yeah, I'm proud of myself. I like myself. I like what I proposed. I liked what I just made. It makes me look back at my career and see things with that perspective. I see I'm wearing these glasses or these lens where I see, where I'm able to see my career from a perspective of, wow, I've had an incredible career. I'm so proud of myself. I've, you know, every creation has its ups and downs, and what it produces at the end, it's like, it's actually not so significant. What is the overall feeling that you have looking back? What did you gain? What did you learn? Gosh, all these connections that I've had with people, that's priceless, you know? Yeah, but I think the practice begins in the small parts of your day, to be able to look back at your career and feel good about it.
Yeah, it's beautiful what you're saying. It's about practicing and starting from small. It's a bit like a small mantra that you have to repeat yourself. And it's because also it's a pity eventually to miss the opportunity to joy about also the small things. And I would like to ask you if you could give a general advice or to directors, dancers, choreographers, what would it be? And not only as somebody that doesn't feel well, but also as somebody that is leading a group of people, what would be an advice that you could give?
Well, I think everyone is extraordinary. And I think everybody is enough. You are truly, truly enough. You don't need to prove your worth to anyone. Yeah, and no one does you better than you. So do you 102%. I mean, I think that's what makes people successful at what they do. I mean, whether you're a dancer, choreographer, director, and lead yourself from the inside out, choose the experience that you want to experience. And also this, it's called the holographic thinking, but it's being able to use and trust your intuition to be able to hear, listen to your heart, what you truly desire, and then your rationale also. So it's a balance of those three, that triangle, that makes it a little bit more effortless to navigate making choices and how you want to show up in the world. Yeah, and if you're thinking of maybe transitioning into another career, just knowing that you've done enough. You've done enough. And yeah, I hope that people look outwards, excited about what they want to do next, because they already have I think everyone already has what they need. I mean, sure, you can go to school to be re-educated, but you already have what it takes. Intuitively, I think the practice of listening to your intuition and trusting that, I mean, that's so helpful in the studio too, you know? But I think as dancers, as artists, we are very intuitive people. We do practice that already. But don't undermine that, you know? Listen. And then act upon it. Take one small step forward. Yeah.
Arika, it has been a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much for sharing and shining light on this possibility, and the possibility of a solution, which a lot could benefit from. I have one just last question, but this is a bit more personal. What is next for you, and do you have a wish for yourself?
And I love that you asked that question, because it's so important to hold space for yourself to ask that question and answer it, which I do too little of, actually, for myself. I would love a cup of coffee, a cappuccino with oat milk. I'm gonna wake up my Mila, go for a walk with some cousins. And what's up? What's next for me? I have some performances coming up in Gothenburg. I'm about to start a very exciting creation in October. What do I wish? I wish for myself to just keep going forward, from where I am, to continue to become, being in the becoming of something, not to become something, but being in the becoming.
Thank you
very much. Well, I'm very grateful for this time. Thank you so much for opening up this conversation. Thank you so much for having me. I truly enjoyed our time together.
Me too. Thank you very much. really, really precious words. Where can people reach you eventually?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's like an underscore, or like a underline, YA_MA_DA, or you can go to the aharoom.com. I would say those two are the most reachable places. Yeah.
Perfect. I hope people in need will feel like asking your support. Thank you again for being with us, and yes, I hope our paths cross sooner or later in this European world of dance. And thank you very much, Arika.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.